Welcome to the Dead Parrot Podcast. I'm your host, Jason Rambo. With me, as always, my co-host, my large mammal friend, the man with a face made for radio, Sean Alley. What's up, Sean?
Really? Just because I'm a big bearded Sasquatch, that's the way you're going to intro me in, huh?
Well, I mean, I know you're a little jealous. I get it. It's
yeah,
hard. Right?
It's hard to look this good, I guess, on radio.
All right. So, how you doing, Sean?
I'm good. We're back at it. This is episode, what, four?
Yes.
Good crazy. They're flying by.
I know. It seems like this is still our first one. If you you leave me up in charge of these electronics here, it probably will be the first one again. So I tend to be like Fred Flintstone with a cell phone. So
that's all right. One of us has got the technical savvy going on, and I guess that's me. Right. That's what I bring to the show.
Yeah, thank God, right? So, but back from Florida, man, I didn't want to come home and stare at your ugliness. I really didn't. I wanted to stay there on the beach.
Well, you missed a lot of cold, nasty weather. I'll be honest with you. I was shooting last Saturday at Eagle's Nest up at Dan's, and man, I'll tell you right now, I'm out there freezing my butt off and thinking, well, Jason's down there. It's probably high 60s, low 70s. He's got the sun, the wind blowing and everything, and I'm up here, you know, with a cold nose, runny nose, trying to keep my fingers from freezing and shooting the gun at Clay Birds. So I think you had the better end of the deal there.
Yeah, but you shot pretty darn good. That's probably your highest score ever on a tournament, isn't it?
Yep. Tied for first in my class and did really well. Just kind of really was able to focus and read the birds. So no complaints there. Just got to keep after it as always. But we always have our good days and our bad days.
Right. Well, I didn't fare so well. We won't talk about my scores.
But why not? Let's talk.
Well, I mean, to be honest with you, I would probably, and I think I told you this once before when I was still down there, I would probably pay double the money of my trip for half my score. It was just, the experience was just, oh, wow, it was awesome.
Yeah. I mean, especially when you're used to shooting at your local clubs and you travel out of state for the first time and you go to a club you've never been to before, it's always exciting. You never know what to expect. You don't know what kind of target you're going to get. So why don't you tell us a little bit about what you saw, heard, and did down there?
Well, let's back up just a little bit if we could.
Okay.
We talked about traveling with a shotgun.
Yes.
And this is my first experience. So coming into the airport, I'm already nervous, right?
Right.
I don't know if any of you have flown lately, but there's not a lot of people at the airports right now. So I go walking up to the counter at Southwest, and the guy waves me over. He sees me dragging a gun case, and I said, you know, I'm like to clear a firearm. He said, yeah, I figured that's what you had. That's why I waved you over. The process was so simple. Of course, he asked me to open the case. You know, I opened the case. He looked at it. He had me fill out a tag. He threw it in there and had me lock the case back up, gave me a tag, and he said, it's possible that TSA may want to look at it. As long as they don't, you won't hear anything. I'm like, okay. He said, if they do, we'll come and get you.
So no news is good news,
basically. Yeah, no news is good news. So everything went great. Landed in Tampa. They told me you'll have to go to the baggage claim office to get it. So I went to baggage claim office, and lo and behold, they had put my daughter's name. You know, we all had check luggage, and they put my daughter's name on my gun case.
Oh, gee, many Christmas.
And they're like, well, we'll need to see her ID. And I'm like, she's an 8-year-old little girl. You're going to give her a firearm to walk around the airport? And they laughed, and they caught the mistake. Plus, I wrote my name on the case anyway. So yeah. That was good. Coming back, we had actually bought an additional flight because I was so nervous about the layover. And lo and behold, that airline canceled the flight 5 minutes before we were supposed to board. So we ran back over to Southwest, and this is a big prop to Southwest. We explained the situation, told them why we didn't get on an earlier flight, and they completely understood. They didn't charge us anything, but I had to go back down to baggage claim, get my gun, bring it back up, recheck it through Southwest, and it had to go back through TSA again, leaving Florida. This time, let me back up. So in Florida, their airport, it does go through TSA.
Okay.
So the lady at check-in actually picks the gun up, and she carries it. You follow her over to TSA. They'll ask you to open the case again. They just want to make sure there's nothing in there. The TSA agents were by far very, very polite. They were really cool to deal with. I was scared to death. I think they could see that. And no problems. Got to Columbus. Again, no problems. Got my gun with ease. You got to show your ID. Cedar Mill gun cases.
Yep.
We talked about that one time.
Right.
I can tell you, I watched my gun get thrown onto the conveyor belt. When we were getting ready to leave Columbus, I was looking out the window, and I
can guess your hackles are up at this point. You're probably like, that son of a gun.
Oh, man. I wanted to go right out on the tarmac and punch somebody. But anyway, I watched him throw my gun up onto the conveyor belt, and I'm like, oh, my gosh. I can honestly tell you both places, home and when we landed in Tampa, the gun had not moved a quarter of an inch.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it was very well protected. There's some scuffs on the outside of the case. You're going to get that. I don't care what case you have.
Well, better the case than the gun. I mean, that's what the whole point of having a good case is.
Right. So that worked out really well.
Good.
So here's an interesting one. So I show up at Blackjack. Okay. We actually flew in on a Sunday. We spent some family time. It was a family vacation as well. Spent some time on the beach stuff. So I told the wife, I want to get over to Blackjack a day early, get everything paid for. I want to find out where am I going to get my golf cart? Where am I going and everything? And so we went over there on a Wednesday, and I finished paying at registration, and I was blown away. First of all, they give you a map of the whole place, which is very helpful. It was just a simple hand-drawn map, but, man, it was thank God they gave me that because I'd have been lost. That place is enormous.
Big facility, huh?
Oh, my gosh. And first impression, you pull up, of course, we're used to oak trees and pine trees, and you're seeing palm trees and sand and
Different.
Yeah, and when I was walking up to the clubhouse, if you guys remember, Malcolm Parker told us they had a really neat five stand built around it has to be a 200-year-old oak tree. This thing's enormous.
Wow.
It's elevated. It is gorgeous. It's really neat. The inside of the clubhouse, we're going to post some pictures on our Facebook page. I've took some pictures inside the clubhouse. Really nice. Very high-end. But they gave me my goodie bag. You always get a goodie bag when you sign up for a state shoot.
Yeah, right.
Let me tell you the contents of this goodie bag. So there was a hat. There was a shooting towel. There was a spray can of gun cleaner / oil. Okay. Hand sanitizer. Advil. Wet wipes. Band-Aids. A little sample size of gun oil. Some chapstick. There was sunscreen. Insect repellent. There was anti-fog lens cleaning spray with a really nice lens cleaning wipe. And there was even some Tic Tacs in there. And there was 8 chips to the five stand for warm-up. 8.
Oh, nice. Nice.
Yeah. And, this was all sample size stuff. But for a guy that's flying in somewhere, we're from up here in the north. We fly in down there, it's warm weather, you wouldn't think, oh yeah, I'm going to need sunscreen, I'm going to need insect repellent. This stuff was very handy, it was very helpful, and so, just a word to anybody that's thinking about going to any of these big shoots, out of town, make sure you prepare for that. I was lucky, I was fortunate enough, we stayed with my stepdaughter, and of course, I went to Walmart, I bought my cooler, I bought my groceries I was going to need, water, I bought all this stuff that was included, but for somebody that's unprepared that shows up at a shoot, that was really, really neat that they did that for us, and, you kind of got to prepare for this stuff when you go to these big shoots. A lot of people don't think of that stuff.
Well, that's really nice, and I think that's another word to the wise, all the other clubs listening out there, when you're having a big event, I guess Blackjack's doing it right. I know we've had some good experiences at Cardinal when we did the state shoot, and the Northeast Regional last year, they gave away some free stuff, and a lot of it was good. But that's by far the biggest laundry list of goodie bag I've ever heard of.
Well, let's put it in perspective. This is also the state championship. They're not going to do that on your average weekend tournament.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Target prices dictate how much a club can do. It's common sense. I get it. But that was really neat that they did that, and it made me really think, wow, did I bring all this stuff? I didn't get to fly with my gear bag. So the duffel bag that I flew with, I emptied everything out and I put all my shooting gear in it and went to the club. Again, there was a couple things in that list I just rattled off that I did forget, like insect repellent. Now, the weather was good. We didn't have any problem with insects, but if I had forgotten that, that was handy to have.
And I've been down to Florida in some hot, humid weather, and the mosquitoes seem to be drawn to people. So I get it.
Well, and another thing I thought was cool, too, they gave you 8 practice chips, and they had a makeshift five stand set up over on the trap field. I think they had 6 or 7 traps over there. And they told me, they said, if you don't want to do that, we'll give you a Promatic card. We've got a 100 bird course open for practice. You can go. I'm like, you got it. Oh, wow. Yeah. So that was really cool. But, you know, I got to thinking about it. I'm not a big warm-up guy. I usually want to shoot just like they offered. You get like 8 pairs to warm up. That's good for me. You know, you're not going to learn anything new at a day of a tournament, right? But I got to thinking about that. I had planned ahead for this, and I had my stepdaughter raiding all the Walmarts for I like Remington STS shells. Mm-hmm. So I had her buying me the nitros, and I got to thinking, I was like, you know, what if that's not available in the area, and they get there and are counting on a vendor to have shells there, where the only shells they had were the, I'm going to screw this up, Experiencia or whatever, or Experiencia shells. Mm. I've never shot with them before, but if I wasn't fortunate enough to have shells there waiting for me when I got there, what if a guy wanted to try those and he's not real sure of them? Well, he can go out and practice. You know, they give you all those practice tips, so that was kind of handy.
Well, that's good. I mean, at least if they don't have a wide selection, at least you can figure it out early on. And then, you know, most people have their own favorite shells that they bring, and it makes sense. But, yeah, word to the wise, make sure you got your favorite shells before you go to a big tournament.
Yeah. That's another thing, too, that, you know, I think moving forward, I want to make sure that the shells that that I want are there. And like Chad said, you can actually ship the shells, your shells, to a shoot. So that's something to, you know, maybe look into. And I know you're getting ready. I don't want to give too much away because I know we're going to have some special guests in the future. But I know that you're getting ready to travel in February. Yep. So maybe, you know, that might be something you can bring up to our guests. Hey, you know, is this possible? Can I ship some shells there? Or do you have the shells that I use? Do you have them for sale there?
Well, fortunately, we've got a friend of ours that's going to be traveling down with a fifth wheel motor camper, and he graciously offered to carry our shells with him on the way down. Me and my wife are flying down, as well as my buddy. That's just one of those things. You know, right now, ammo is kind of scarce for a lot of people, and finding the shells that you want, especially if you're traveling across state, might be kind of a crapshoot. So, if you got to have those kind of shells, you better make sure that you got access to them.
Absolutely. Well, the shoot itself was awesome. The targets were incredible. Mike Luongo and Doug Vine set the targets for everything, and it was when you first see the show pair, I had to stop, this is soft. And then it's a dead loss. Really? Did that just happen? So you need to pay way more attention. You need to have good planning on each one of them. Of course, we all want to hear the dead pair.
The dead pair.
But, no, it was a really good shoot. Man, the scores were incredible. Zach Keenbaum put up 100 straight on the blue course in the main. I know Braxton Oliver put up 100 straight. The scores were, I was blown away.
I mean, I saw a lot of high 90s, 99s, 98s, 97s all across the board on the big guys. Yeah. So definitely stiff competition there at the high end.
And, you know, I caught up with Braxton, and unfortunately he was getting ready to go shoot, so I didn't have a chance to do an interview with him. But I asked him, I said, Braxton, what kind of mental focus does it take to shoot 100 straight like that? And he kind of smiled and he shook his head. He goes, you know how many 99s I've shot where I've missed the last bird?
Ain't been there, done that.
So it's like, I just, we'll get into that future episodes, you know, that kind of mental focus and stuff that those guys have. But for me, like I said, as a wrap up, I would say do it. I would have paid double the money for half my score. It wasn't about my score. It wasn't about, you know, Jason going down there and trying to be a Florida State champ, okay? This was about the experience. I met a lot of really cool people. I made new friends, new contacts, people that are going to come on the show now. I know not everybody's interested in the show, but what I'm getting at is it was an experience of a lifetime. I'll never forget it, and I look forward to doing more of them.
Yeah, and for those of you that are out there shooting, I mean, you have your local clubs, and if you're on the tournament scene, you know, you're shooting a tournament a month or whatever, you're used to, I should say, you have knowledge of the club that you're going to and what kind of targets they usually set. When you go to a club that you've never been before and a target setter maybe that you've never seen targets from before, totally changes your perspective. That's how you learn, that's how you grow, and that's how you get better. So obviously take every opportunity you can to travel to other clubs, other states even, shoot some different tournaments, because by doing that, you're just going to make yourself a better shooter.
Right, right. So big shout out to Zach Keenbaum. He was high overall with a 192. And big shout out to Joe Finese. He is the Florida State champ. He came in there with a 185. So, of course, he's resident, so
right.
That's why he's Florida State champ.
Right.
But Andy Duffy was running her up, so congrats to those guys. They shot really, really well. I hope someday I have the talent and the ability to shoot like they do, man.
Don't we all?
It's incredible.
Don't we all?
So, but I was able to catch up with some people. We're going to play the interviews for you guys. These ran a little long, but I did not want to edit anything as far as time or content, because I think each person that we interviewed had very good information and very interesting and even a little entertaining. So we're going to let them play full length, and we've actually built this entire episode around that. Two things. Before anybody says, well, that's the end of the interviews and shuts off this podcast, we have an announcement to make. We have a giveaway. So stay tuned for that at the end. And I want everybody to know that these interviews were brought to you by ProSign Studios. Visit www.prosignstudios.com.
Okay, I was able to snag Rollins Brown with a lasso and his lovely wife, Kimball DuPont. Guys, welcome. Thank you for taking a few minutes to do this. Thank you, Rollins, for pushing Sean and I into doing the Dead Pair podcast. We credit you with the driving force behind us. Questions for both of you, but sorry, Rollins, ladies come first.
Okay.
Okay.
We're here at the Florida State shoot. What's your overall opinion so far?
I'm having a great time.
How have you been shooting?
Well, I didn't shoot much this year, so I didn't have the highest expectations, but I had some good events and some, let's say I had some good stands and some not so great stands. But overall, the targets have been great, and it's just so fun to be with friends again. So I've really enjoyed that.
Awesome. How about you, Rollins?
This is what, maybe my third or fourth tournament after being off sick all summer. So mostly stayed right around 90% here. So it's okay. It's not where I want to be, but it could certainly be a lot worse. So I'm not really upset.
Well, just shy of Braxton Oliver shooting 100 straight today. I don't think anybody's exactly where they want
to
be.
Exactly.
But
and then Zach ran the blue course.
Yes.
On the main.
Oh, he did.
Yeah.
Yes. I didn't see that score yet. Wow.
Yes. After some stations, 15 and then 1 back to back, were two of the hardest stations out there on that course today, and just to see that somebody put up 100 on that was very impressive.
Yes.
And to not question his authenticity or the credibility of his shooting,
true,
just makes it even more amazing.
Oh yeah, absolutely. It was I think Mike and Doug did a great job with these targets. They weren't over the top. They were just technical enough that you had to stay in it. You could not break focus.
Yeah.
Myself, I think I had a little bit of Ray Charles syndrome out there. But
it comes and goes.
Yes, absolutely. Kimball, you told me that you normally have a booth that you set up and everything, but you didn't this time. So I guess that's a little bit fortunate for you. You could concentrate more on your shooting. But for people that don't know who you are, that just crawled out from under a rock, tell us exactly about DuPont Krieghoff.
Well, DuPont Krieghoff has been selling Krieghoff since 1955. My father started importing Krieghoffs in 1955 under the business name Europa Corporation. And when they switched from the model K32 to what is known now as the K80, Krieghoff International began importing. So they became Krieghoff, and we became DuPont Krieghoff. So.
Right.
We're the only dealer that has Krieghoff in our name, so we try and not use Europa Corporation quite as much and use DuPont Krieghoff. So I've joined the company about 11 years ago, and I've just had so much fun with it because I've been able to shoot and travel and meet great people, and it's just, I really have the best job there is, because I have work at a toy store, basically, and people come in with their friends and their family, and they're never in a bad mood, and, you know, customer service is our number one priority, so everybody seems to have very good feedback on that, which just, again, makes my life even better, so I'm a very, very lucky girl.
Well, Rollins, you have several businesses here in Florida. How you have time to go shooting is amazing to me with everything that you're involved with. But You've been here to Blackjack before.
I have.
I know you encouraged me to come down and shoot this shoot, and I'm very thankful because this is a blast.
It's a really cool venue.
Yeah.
I mean, right where we're sitting and what we can see right now all the way around us is pretty awesome.
The five stand here that they're doing the make or break on is just amazing.
That oak tree is out of this world.
Oh, yeah.
Beautiful.
Absolutely. There's no better backdrop. I know I left 5 inches of snow and 30-degree temperature to come here, so that was already a blessing to begin with, but this shoot, just the way everything's ran, has been awesome. We're all about trying to convince people to come to these shoots. So,
right.
Rollins, what would you say to maybe a guy that's getting his feet wet, competitive, that's thinking about coming across country to one of these big shoots?
Absolutely do it. First of all, I don't think there's any more welcoming group of people than sporting clay shooters. You don't have to know what you're doing. You get on a squad and ask. It's pretty simple. People are so helpful. There's something about it that it makes participants, people that are in the sport, really hungry to foster and help new people. So it's just, it's really easy to get into because everywhere you look, people are willing and happy to help you. And I think that you can get an appreciation for the sport as a whole. Mm-hmm. Going to a big shoot doesn't mean you have to always go to a big shoot. It doesn't have to mean that you have to become a pro-level competitor. But you see, it opens your eyes a lot to what's going on, to the equipment and the kind of targets and the people and how it all runs. I think it's valuable, and it's, I mean, above all else, it's an incredible vacation, if you will.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And that, you know, that kind of brings up something that Kimball said. You know, you said with your business, when people come in to see you, they're always happy, and, you know, this is playtime. You don't meet anybody in a bad mood on a sporting clays course, you know?
Not often,
no.
Nope.
No, not at all. I know I wouldn't trade it for anything. I mean, I've done other sports, I've raced and everything else, and I don't think there's a finer class of people than you'll find at a sporting clay course.
Very unique environment.
Absolutely.
There's something about the sport, and maybe the shooting sports in general, that sort of strains out, you know, it groups together. It attracts really good people. Let's put it that way, for some reason, somehow. Yeah,
right.
Generally speaking, you find a lot of great people in the sport. And really, moreover, you find that the kids that have been raised in the sport are just outstanding young adults.
Yes.
And I think that's the testament to the sport. There's some character about it that really impresses responsibility on kids.
Right. Well, Kimball, you being a lady in this sport, you know, we've done an interview before with one of our friends up home that's a friend of ours, girlfriend, and she really encourages women in the sport. What would you say to a gal that's thinking about getting into this? What advice would you have for her for getting involved in sporting clays?
If you have a girlfriend that you know of that is already shooting, just say, hey, can I go with you sometime and watch and maybe practice one day, or call a local gun club and just say, I'm interested in shooting. I've never done this before. What can I do? And I would say probably 95% of the gun clubs out there would be more than welcoming to have you come out, set you up with a beginner instructor.
Sure.
And you don't have to go with your spouse. You could just do it alone. Because sometimes that's a better fit, to not be embarrassed in front of your significant other. And then just go out, or go out with another girlfriend that might be just interested, and just try it. Because it is so fun when you break that first clay and you think, oh my gosh, look at that, it's fireworks in the sky.
Right.
And then you start to get the bug a little bit and you want to do it more and more. And it's definitely, there are a lot more women shooting now than there were 10 years ago when
many,
I started.
Many.
I would say that's probably the biggest influx right now is women in the sport, more so than the youth.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I see it more and more every time. I think it's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and there's one of those things that if mom's doing it, well, pretty soon dad's doing it, and then the kids are doing it, and that's, it's really, it is a family environment.
Mm-hmm.
It is.
So,
mm-hmm. It is. And, you know, I'll tell you what, almost anywhere in the country, there are female instructors available. Make a couple of phone calls. if a woman wants to get into shooting, go ahead and get a female instructor. They're probably going to be a little more comfortable.
Right.
And they don't feel the pressure. That's the way to do it, I think.
Yeah.
I think that's a good thing.
I think when husband or boyfriend is trying to coach, you kind of get into a little hard feelings sometimes.
It's,
it's maybe not the way to go.
Tough dynamic.
Right. Yes. Yeah, yeah. Absolutely.
That's not the, I don't think, you know, we generally, we don't coach each other. We don't always shoot together. Yeah, it's best to kind of break off, I think, at times.
Yeah.
And, but I think a new female shooter should look around and find a female instructor, because there's a different dynamic. And I think that dynamic is important.
Absolutely. So I'm going to ask some rapid-fire questions.
Okay.
Sorry, ladies first, Roland.
Okay.
Okay. I know what brand of gun, but tell us what gun you're shooting.
I shoot a Krieghoff K80 Parkour, 32-inch fixed choke.
Fixed choke.
Mm-hmm.
And what are they fixed at?
They're fixed at 18 and 18.
Nice.
Roland? Just got a light mod.
What are you shooting, Rollins?
I shoot the Krieghoff K80 Parkour's X, which I helped design last year. And pleasantly surprised that they're actually putting in production. And I love it. I think it's absolutely the perfect sporting gun. And I have, see, mine's choked. Of course, all the Parkour's X come choked. So I shoot generally mod, or I mod.
Factory chokes, or?
Yeah.
Okay. Do you change chokes?
Not very often.
No.
Nope.
Now, I know you both are getting some help from Winchester, but what recipe of shell are you shooting?
You know, that's a great question. I love the new 1-ounce 1250 that they're making, but I started on the 1-ounce 1290, and it makes this noise. It makes this whap noise when it hits the target. And I, not that the 1250 doesn't, but I just have to say it's my go-to comfort, confidence load, I would
say. I know that new load you're talking about, the 1-ounce 1250 Super Sport, I believe it is, it only comes in 7.5. When you jump to the 1-ounce 1290, do you ever run any 8s, or do you still stick with 7.5?
I actually only shoot 7.5s because I have some demons in my head that like to talk to me. And so I just shoot 7.5s. I, at one point in time, used to keep a couple spreaders in my pockets, and I would have 8s and 7.5s, but that's just too much for me. I need to work on actually making a plan and looking at the target and breaking it when I see it clearly and not worrying about what choke I'm using or what shell, you know, what load I'm using. So for me, I just take it all out.
Gotcha. What are you shooting, Rollins?
Light handicaps and FETASC and super handicaps in everything else.
Okay.
It's always, you know, I've been a Winchester, a loyal Winchester shooter for, I don't know, 35 years, with a couple of stints of importing some other stuff for business purposes, but I've always been a Winchester shooter. I love it. More particularly, if you listen really hard, even if you miss, as long as you're shooting a Winchester shell, you can hear that clay screaming in fear.
Are either one of you shooting the new diamond grades at certain targets?
I will on really long distance FETASC targets. Those shells really pick up their utility over 50 yards.
Are you shooting the 1-ounce 1250 or the 1-ounce 1300?
The faster ones, yeah.
13 or 1350?
1350.
1350.
Yeah.
Okay. Now, I can see them on your head, but the listeners can't. What kind of glasses are you shooting?
Pilas.
And you're shooting?
Pila.
Pilas also. Okay. Either one of you prescription or no?
Nope.
Vest or shell bag?
Vest.
Brand?
Castellani.
Excellent. And any other tips you guys want to throw out there?
Picking a good coach to start with. The way to do that, look at the results around your area. Pick the guys who are winning the most. Go to a shoot or call them or email them and ask them who the best coach is. When you start collecting 3 or 4 names, the ones that keep popping up, that's who you need to go talk to.
Excellent.
I would agree, because you don't want to have any bad habits early on. So if somebody can get you with the right technique early on, the right mount, you know, all that kind of stuff, it's going to save you a lot of heartache in the end.
Right.
Don't worry so much about the equipment. You'll know when you need to make a change. You know, really, it's about plugging away. And don't forget, never forget, George Digweed has never had a custom stock.
That's okay? Right.
It's the driver.
Right. Mm-hmm. It's not the package, it's the address you send it
to. That's right.
Mm-hmm. That's right. Okay, one last question. And I'd like to hear from both of you, but if I can only get one answer, I'll take it. If you had a tip for the Dead Pair podcast of maybe a particular guest that nobody's heard from, or maybe a particular topic that nobody's thought of, what would that be?
Oh, that's a good one.
That is a good one.
It's a stumper. I would like to hear, I think what's inspiring is people that have just kind of broken out into the big time when their story is still kind of fresh, to see how they got from, you know, the letter classes up to master, and pick it apart and ask them what was most important to them. Was it a particular coach, or was it a particular move, or was it a practice schedule or something like that? And I think that that's important, to ask those kinds of questions of a lot of people who have bona fides, that you can then start pulling out what's the common theme here.
Right.
And the common theme is, I can tell you right now where the answer will be in the long run. The common theme is going to be qualified instruction and hard work. That's the only, that's all that matters.
There's no give me's in this game.
Zero.
Yeah. There's no give me's in this game, that's for sure. There's no easy path. You have to do the work. I would say the biggest shortcut, though, by far, is definitely an instructor.
Definitely.
You know, I went 2 years backwards until I had one, and then I'm still correcting the bad habits. You know, like you said, Kimball, not developing those bad habits early. Get it with the coach early, and they'll keep you from going the wrong direction. So.
You know, and people treat coaching like it's a 2-hour fix-all, and that's not what it is. You need to be, I tell people when they go to get a lesson, bring a friend and video it if the coach will let them. Bring a recorder, bring a notepad. So what you're doing is, you know, try and take down as much as you can during that lesson. Or, you know, my coach is Anthony. Anthony will always write me a page of notes when I'm done. I keep them in my shooting bag. I've got, you know, years worth.
Wow.
But the point is, people treat it as a 2-hour fix, and it's not. And I see people go, you know, they'll have a lesson on Monday, then they have a lesson on Wednesday, then they have a lesson on Friday. Well, they haven't practiced. You need to practice like at least 5 times. For every hour of lesson, you need 5 hours of practice. You've got to go out there and turn that into your own. You've got to make that subconscious and automatic. It doesn't do you any good to go right back to the instructor and start right back with rote instruction. You have to take what you learned in that first lesson and make it your own.
Right.
And I don't see people doing that.
Right.
I would agree. And I think of the example, when I was a little girl, my mom made me take piano lessons. And I remember it was every Tuesday afternoon after school. And her name was Mrs. Williams. And I had my hour lesson with her. And then I had to practice every day what I learned then, because next Tuesday I was going to have to go back and see Mrs. Williams. And if I hadn't practiced, she was going to know. And it was one of those kind of things. But if you could get into the habit of actually practicing what they just told you and putting into use, and then going back and building on that, rather than going from lesson to lesson and not practicing, I think that people will excel. I talk to a lot of parents, and they think, do I put my child into an SCTP program, or do I go straight to an instructor and have them go the NSCA route? And, you know, that's a decision for the family to make, because there are a lot of great instructors out there. But consistency of practice, I think, is probably the most important.
Yeah, and part of the reason that that's hard is people get out on the course and they say, oh, I'm going to go practice today. But they don't really have any specific plan on how they're going to do that. So they just go out and they shoot the course.
Right.
And by the way, shooting the course with buddies, just going and shooting the course, shooting 100, that's not practice.
Right.
That's
exactly.
more than likely wasting your money unless one of them is a top shot and he's giving you help on everything, right? So one of the reasons that people don't do this, I think, is because they don't know what it means to practice. I'll send it to you. Derek Mine and I wrote this little guide. It's like a four-step or four-part guide on how to practice. There's like remedial practice after a tournament where you're specifically going to a course and working on things that you know you need work on because of performance in the last tournament. Then there's your standard practice, and then there's pre-tournament practice, and then there's some other stuff, and I'll send that to you, and if you wanted to put it on your website, it's it gives people a structure so that they go out there and they're not just wandering around the course aimlessly.
Right.
It gives them, okay, you're going to do A, B, C, and D today before you're done, and then, you know what? 2 hours later, you've actually accomplished something that, you know, will help you internalize what you need to be learning.
Right. Thank you both very much for taking a few minutes. Kimball, do you want to let people know how they can get a hold of you if they're interested in new Krieghoff?
Certainly. You can go to our website, dupontkguns.com, and send us a message on there. If you have any questions related to shooting, women shooting, how women can get involved, I'm more than happy to help. I definitely love helping young pups, is what I call them, get into the sport. So any parents out there that have questions, I'm more than happy to do my part too.
Awesome.
To give my free advice.
Well, I think they're serving dinner now, so let's go get some grub. Good luck to both of you tomorrow.
Thank you.
You too, Jason.
Next, see you up the top of the scoreboard. I need a little bit of a miracle, but I think I might be able to pull something off. So.
We all do after today.
Right. Thank you both very
Thanks
much.
Thanks for having us.
All right, I'm here with Kevin Miles and Karen Shedd. Guys, thank you very much for taking a few minutes to answer some questions for us. Kevin, let's start with you. How'd you do today? You shot the prelim, correct?
No, sir. I shot the Super Sporting this morning, and then I shot the VTAS this afternoon. The Super Sporting was really good targets, but they were maybe on the softer side. Braxton Oliver and Zach Keenbaum shot really well. They shot 100 and a 99. And then I personally did okay. I started off kind of rough, though. I missed three targets right off the bat, and then I woke up, shot a 95 on that. But then the feet task went really well for me today. Yesterday, I had a kind of a tough start at the beginning of the feet task. I shot a 22 on the first layout, and I'm actually shooting a new stock that's still in the white, and it was just. It feels slightly different. I think it's going to be better in the long run for me, but because I'm hitting targets harder than I have in a long time. My body's changed just a little bit over the last couple years, and so I thought a new stock would be beneficial. And Krieghoff built that for me.
Nice.
And so yesterday I just had a couple hiccups on the beginning of the feet task, but then I finished really strong. I shot 50 straight today on the feet task.
Oh, nice.
And they were really fun. Challenging targets. I think there are going to be some high scores on it, but for the most part, I thought they were really, really good targets.
Awesome. Karen, you shot the same, correct?
I did, correct.
How'd you do?
Gavin kind of started off rough on both of them, but I was the opposite. I started off really solid today in the Super Sporting, and then I just had two stations in a row where a couple targets had my number, but then I was able to kind of bounce back and start hitting stuff better again, and I finished okay, 92, which was it was fine. But then
very respectable.
Thank you. And then super or feet task yesterday, I started off really strong, ran a 25.
Nice.
Then I went to my next one and I'm not being able to keep my mental focus, I guess, or applying myself 100%. Struggled a little bit on my second one, and then today I kind of did the exact same thing. I shot a 25 again. And then struggled on my last one.
Jeez. Well, when you figure out that mental focus, please give us a call.
Well, for her.
On the feet task, there was a couple targets actually that I haven't shot before. Mm. So I didn't know how to shoot them, and I missed, like, the last one. There is a tower that I haven't really shot, and I missed it four times.
And
just not knowing. And then, I'll learn it and work through it and have that in my target bank.
Yeah, so. That specific shot, it was a really funky target. We don't shoot it a whole lot. It was off the tower. it was on edge at the beginning, and then it kind of dove down. So the machine was actually angled down, right? So it was on edge and then kind of rolled open a little bit as it was falling to the ground. And it's just a really awkward shot that I don't think Karen has ever practiced. You know, she's only been shooting sporting clays 3 years. And there's still targets out there that she needs to learn. As much success as she's had this year, there's probably going to be targets, you know, for the next few years that she still needs to learn.
Sure.
And so, you know, having a good perspective on those when you do have, like, these big highs like she has, you know, and then you've got these downfalls a little bit. Where it was the same thing today on the Super Sport with her. There was some middies and some minis that she hadn't seen before, that she really hasn't practiced those type of shots. And so hopefully we're going to be able to set some stuff up like that during this off season and fine-tune her game a little bit so that she's a bit more ready, because she has as much talent as anybody out there. And it's just a matter of learning all the different angles that you might see.
Well, that kind of leads me into my next question. The dead pair, we're really focused on the new guy or gal coming in, and they're trying to get their feet wet competing. So the only thing that I've shot that you guys shot was the Super Sporting, and I would say if I had to pick a target, it would probably be tricky for a new person. It would be Station 1, I think it was Target D, was a right-to-left crosser.
Mm-hmm.
Or if not a crosser, at least a deep quartering target.
Mm-hmm.
So obviously everybody's different, but you two as coaches, how would you recommend someone approach that target? How would you recommend when they step into the box, they see that right to left, it's fast, it's quartering. It's curling as it's crossing.
Yeah.
How would you recommend someone approach that target?
Well, so for me, a crossing target is a target that's somewhere past a 45-degree angle, right? So it's 45 to then, if you can imagine, a 90-degree angle, and then the next 45 degrees past that, all that area right there for me is a crosser, okay? And so that one was definitely a crosser. It was just a little bit less than a 90-degree angle from you, and very, very fast, like you said, and it had a really big curl to it as well. And that target, so I'm thinking about those things. So in my mind, I'm going to say, okay, it's probably going to need a little bit more lead than most targets that I've shot out here. And because of the speed and distance, you know, the kill point was probably close to 45, maybe even 50 yards away from you. I'm gonna trust a big lead on that thing. So that's the first thing that I'm gonna tell myself. But then after that, I'm gonna go back to basics, because every target that I look at, I try to mark my break point, try to mark my hard focus point, and that's a really big determining factor on every target is your hard focus. Where can you see that target clear? Because the faster a target is, the later your hard focus is gonna be. So that means, so, you know, we mark our kill point and our hard focus, and if your hard focus is out of the machine a long way, that means your whole point's going to move out a little bit too, because I always try to put my whole point halfway between those two points. And so when I saw where my hard focus was and where my kill point was, my whole point was pretty far out for that angle, or it felt like it was far out. But then when I watched Karen shoot it, because she shot right in front of me, she hammered it every time, holding where I thought somebody should hold for it. And that target, it took a lot. I mean, I probably felt, you know, 7-8 feet on that target. And personally, I hit it the first two times, but when they threw it as a second shot on the report pair, I think it was the very last pair, I did miss it once, just because I shot a hair fast. And that's a target that you don't want to rush. And if you're going to miss it as a top shooter, it's probably going to be because you rushed it. And that's what I did. Karen hit it every time. She hit it in the right break point every single time, and made the right move on it. And so with that target, you just got to stick to basics and then get out of your comfort zone as far as lead. Every shooter in the squad, in our squad, actually, I don't know if, I think one guy hit it a couple times, or maybe once, but everybody hit, except for Karen, missed it at least once. Mm-hmm. I think somebody missed it two or three times. And it's just, if you see a target like that, trust more lead.
So, Karen, that being said, did you approach that with a maintained lead?
Yes, I did. So I actually, the person who shot in front of me, they waited a little bit longer, and I got to see the whole path quite a few more times than just the showbirds. But and he actually hit it late two times pretty solidly, right? But for me, that target starts to do some goofy stuff when it's later.
Yeah, I want to get some of its transition.
Exactly. So I was watching for the most consistent part of the target line, right? And then when I picked my breakpoint, I found my hard focus, found that, and I just started visualizing that target breaking and watching it happen, you know, as the guy in front of me was shooting.
Right.
And then when I got up there, the biggest thing that I had to do is, like, yeah, commit to all the spots and then just let it happen and trust the big gap. And, like, Gebbin, he did that on his first two, and then the last one that he did miss, his eyes got a little bit slower, but then he just shot a little bit faster. So for me, on that last pair, because I knew it was challenging, and I knew the target setter does that stuff on purpose, you know, because it's going to be a challenge and going to make the athlete work hard. Right. So I was reminding myself, okay, after I break the first one, let my eyes see it early, smooth, matched, and trust the big gap.
Right. I'm telling you, when it comes to you two, I could be a sponge off of you two all day long. And we're going to get into that. I guess I'll give a little teaser. You two are going to be on a future episode with us, and really looking forward to that.
Yes, sir.
Couple quick questions. Y'all both are shooting Krieg off, right?
Correct.
That's right.
Fixed choke or screw chokes?
So we actually both shoot Muller U3s. Mm-hmm. So they're kind of fixed choke because we actually never change.
Mm-hmm.
Both of us have committed to shooting pretty tight chokes. So the Muller U3 is about an I-mod.
Mm-hmm.
And so I've been shooting for Muller for 8 years now, and they've been a great company to me, and I really enjoy their chokes. But we basically shoot a fixed choke gun because neither one of us change.
Jeremy, you don't change chokes at all?
No.
Not at all.
And I did today for the first time in a tournament in 5 or 6 years, I think. it was the one that was, you guys haven't shot the orange. They had basically a trap target that was straight out, and then it had another belly coming right out you, and it was point blank. And
gotcha.
The first time I screwed in a skeet choke.
And okay.
I still inkballed it, but
yeah.
Right.
You guys, okay, so that being said, you're both shooting U3s, which are light modified, or no?
Improved modified.
Yeah. Right. For the new guy starting out, there's nothing wrong with looser choke, am I right?
No, you're absolutely right. I think, for a lot of the top guys, we just like to know exactly where we are.
Right.
When we hit them,
you feed off your brakes.
Mm-hmm.
You feed off your brakes, and I like to see them brake hard. I like to see a lot of smoke. And sometimes if I have more of an open choke, like I don't look at it as hard because
right.
I think, okay, I've got a little bit more room for air.
Mm-hmm.
But, shotgun shooting, even though we're throwing a pattern out there, is a precision game. And so for me, I think there's some advantages to shoot tighter chokes because the top guys don't really miss by a lot. And if you know where you hit a target and you can make a slight adjustment and hit it better, you might, run a station rather than missing one on a station.
Right.
I think now some people view it the other way, like, hey, I've got more room for air.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can mentally be okay with a little bit looser choke, I don't think there's anything wrong with that. And especially newer shooters, I would say stick with something like an IC, and feel free to open up to a skeet or a cylinder on really close targets, but you don't have to feel like, okay, I have to do what the top guys are doing, because it'd be like a brand new golfer trying to play the same clubs as a professional golfer.
Right.
It's just probably not a wise idea. In fact, I took Karen out to play golf a few times earlier this year, and she has clubs for a beginner, and she hits them well, and then I try to get her into some clubs that were my old set just to see how it would go, and it didn't go as well because her swing speed isn't quite where mine is yet, and so it's the same thing with new shooters and top shooters. Like you want to you can't always shoot exactly what the pros are shooting just because you're not as dialed in, maybe.
Speaking of that, Karen, shooting glasses, what do you shoot with?
I shoot with Pilas.
You shoot with Pilas. Now,
yes.
Gebbin, your prescription, right?
Mm-hmm.
What do you shoot with?
So I shoot with Oakleys, okay. And I also shoot with my regular prescriptions as well. So I really like this brand called Silhouette, and I have I just wear their normal glasses on a daily basis, and when I don't need color, I'll typically shoot with those just because like they're made out of glass and I see really really well out of them, but I love my Oakley, so I shoot in Oakley flak jackets when I do need some contrast there, and I shoot with the golf prism mostly, and I do have some clears from Oakley, and I've been going back and forth a little bit just because after I took a year off, I was wearing these during Bible college all last year, and I just see really really well out of them. Mm-hmm. So I've shot in them the majority of the year.
Gotcha. Shells. Do you guys both shoot the same thing, or do you shoot different shells? Or
we shoot the same brand but different shells. I shoot the BMP, the Comp 1 1160s, and okay. Gavin shoots the F2 1250s, right?
Yep.
And I just personally like the lighter recoil. And I hit stuff pretty hard, and a lot of people are shocked, you know, like, hey, Karen, what are you shooting? They'll watch me shoot some giant crossers and V-Task right. or something. Like, I'm shooting 1160s, you know, and just smoking them. And they're like, yeah. No kidding. So the shell, I'm getting no recoil, and I'm still being able to reach all the big shots.
7.5s or 8s?
7.5s.
Yeah, so we actually both shoot 7.5s, just because I feel like those are a little bit less affected by the wind. Mm-hmm. Even though you have less BBs than an 8, I think the wind actually plays a factor. And so that little heavier BB, for me anyway, gives me a little bit more mental advantage. Now, with her shooting the 1160s, most people, like she said, are shocked when they find out she shoots that load. In fact, both of our squads today in the Super Sport and the V-Task, I heard a guy in both the squads ask what shell she's shooting, and she said, you know, 1160, and right. showed them, and they're like,
their eyes
wow.
kind of get
they're
big.
They're like, no way, because she hammers targets with that load. And you know, I think, like, I've come from the generation of shooter where back in the 90s and the early 2000s, more was better. Right, so more BBs, more recoil, more speed, more everything right. was better, and we've just found that it's really not, because, you know, when the Olympic Games went from 1.25 ounce to 1.125 ounce to 1 ounce to 7/8 ounce, scores always improved.
Right.
You know, and shooting a 7/8 ounce load in Olympic Games, their scores are higher. Now the shooters are better too, but I think a lot of it has to do with recoil as well, because yes. you know, when you're locked on a target visually and you don't feel recoil, you can really stay on that target through the entirety of the shot. But if you're anticipating that recoil a little bit, then you know, your eyes could come off, or you could jerk the gun or something. And so I used to shoot, you know, 1300 ounce and 1/8 when I was first starting out. Then I went to like a 1250 ounce and 1/8. And then I shot for Remington for a while, and I was shooting their 1 ounce 1290, which is a good shell. And then when I went to BMP, they had a 1 ounce 1300. But then when I went to Bible College, they actually made a shell that was 1 ounce 1250, and that's my loaded choice right there. I love the 1 ounce 1250. If mentally I can get to where Karen can and trust the 1160, at some point in the future, maybe in my 40s or 50s, I might switch to 1160. But for now, in the foreseeable future, I'm going to stick with the 1 ounce 1250.
Yeah, it was tough for me because, you know, I flew in from out of town, and so I just went to the local Walmart, and I didn't want the less expensive shells, but I went with Remington.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, it's easy to pick up the nitros, right? Because they're plentiful at Walmart, and it's 1 ounce and 1/8. 1235, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
And then I also picked up a whole bunch of the 1145 ounce and 1/8. I'm a 1 ounce shooter.
Mm-hmm.
And the 1235s, they didn't recoil bad. I shot those all day yesterday in the Super Sporting, and today I shot the 1145s all day.
Mm-hmm.
My brakes look just as good,
right,
with the slower shell, but
right,
no recoil.
Mm-hmm. Right, right.
So
yeah, and I mean, shoot, they say the slower the shell, the more the pattern holds together too, right? So at distance, you're probably going to have some better breaks. Mm-hmm. Inside of, you know, 60 yards. And I think, you know, the lighter recoil also helps out a lot, you know, because it mm-hmm. keeps you on that target. And, you know, we train together all the time, and I see her 1160s performing as well as my 1250s, you know, day in and day out.
Right.
So.
Well, like I said, we're going to have you on, y'all both on for an episode here in the near future. I'm excited about that. I'm excited you guys are talking about some new things going on with your shooting school, and that's fascinating. I think people are going to love that too. In the meantime, I know you both are located in Arizona. If there's someone in your area that would like to take lessons from you, do you guys have a contact you want to throw out there?
Sure. Yeah, you can go to GebbaMiles.com, or you can go to SportingClays.academy. So I've actually got a subscription website, SportingClays.academy, that you can sign up for. And there's usually somewhere between 3 and 5 videos that come out a month. And most of them are shorter videos. We try to keep them to like 7 to 15 minutes. Sometimes we'll throw out like a half an hour video or whatever. But we try to throw out these shorter, pretty consistent videos that we talk about and teach all kinds of different things. It's not just shooting. It's mostly shooting. But in fact, my sister, Michelle, did like a stretching video, and we've done like a workout nice. Video. And then Karen... she had an idea about conversations in the car, you know, where she videos me while I'm driving and you know, ask me certain questions,
just
like
common questions that the shooter might have, you know.
And so
awesome.
And so we've got that, and you can contact I think both of us on that site, or GebbaMiles.com. You can email me at, you know, GebbaMiles@me.com or GebbaMiles@gmail.com, and then Karen is KarenKShed@gmail.com. And so, that's our contact, and we really appreciate you having us on the show.
Yes,
and,
thank you.
And what we pleasure. Thank you so much for, you know, for doing this. Our shooting community needs more stuff like this, and you know, it's just such an honor to be part of the shooting community. You know, I've been part of this for 24 years now. I'm about to start my 25th year in this game, and she's been in it 3 years, and it's just filled with so many quality people, and you know, we just hope that you know, our experience can help make a difference in other people's games, and the way we live our life as well. Hopefully we can make positive impacts on people.
Absolutely. Well, you know, my partner Sean and I, we both love the sport. We're both very passionate about it, and what you guys are doing, I think it's exciting to us because it's more opportunities for people to come in. So thank you guys both for taking a few minutes. I didn't want to interrupt your shooting. I'm glad I caught you at the end of the day. Good luck to both of you this weekend.
Thank
we still
you.
Have
Thank
the main
you.
Event to go, so
yes,
good
sir.
Luck. And we'll be talking to you soon.
Yes,
Sounds
sir.
Good.
Excellent.
Thank you.
All right. I am fortunate enough I got to catch up with Mr. Chris Ferris. Chris, thank you for doing this.
Yep.
And also, the Dead Pair would like to thank you for your service. I understand you're a former Marine Corps veteran, so thank you for your service to our country.
Appreciate that. Thank you.
So, we're at the Florida State shoot, man. How'd you do today? Did you shoot? What all did you shoot today?
So I shot the main blue this morning at 11:30, and then I shot Super Sporting at 2:30 this afternoon. So I did okay. A little bit off on both rounds. We started on station 2 on blue, missed a few here and there, and then we ended up on station 1, which was probably a separator on the entire course. I dropped 3 there, ended up with 87 there. So
yeah,
a little bit out of the hunt right now, but it's a fun course and enjoyed the targets.
Well, that's my first time being here to Blackjack and or to the Florida State Championship, and we're trying to encourage people to go to these big shoots like this. To a guy that let's just pick on station 1 because I failed miserably there. If you had some advice for a guy walking into that station, and I understand everybody's different with lead types and whatnot, but how would you recommend a shooter approach a target like that? Now, so everybody knows, these were, I'd say they were quartering.
These yeah, were crossing. They had a little bit of cross in the beginning of their flight path, and then both targets were a little bit compound as far as, they were, you know, curling out there, so you couldn't get straight underneath them. Kind of had to get out there and kind of meet up where they were crossing out there. So I'd say for the most part, you know, a guy going to a station like that, especially lower class guys, they come into it probably a little tight, you know, get a little freaked out because it's a big tower with really fast targets that are crossing. And so, you know, the biggest thing is go up there and just relax, you know.
Right.
Try to look at each target individually, pick your target out, figure out what that flight line is, pick your hold point, you know, it's all the basics.
Right.
And just don't get freaked out. I think for the most part, I watch a lot of people shoot it, even like on my squad. I think people were, again, a little freaked out, giving it too much lead, not really looking at the target.
Yeah.
And I think that's what cost people a lot. You at least got to get the first target and then go for the second target. It's kind of a bonus, and then see how many you can break out of that.
Well, the way that pair was set up, and just so people listening understand, that was a big tower shot. It was over your left shoulder, quartering out. The way it was set up, the slower target was primarily the first one everybody was going after.
Right.
And then by the time you got on the second target, it had already started its transition and started to curl down, and that's where I saw a lot of people miss that target.
Right, because at that point it was kind of curling off to the left a little bit edgy, and, you know, like I said, you want to just focus on getting that first target and then get the gun out there and hope you can make a break on the second target. You know, it's going to be tough to run that station. I think it was set for, you know, for people to miss a few. So it's okay to miss a couple. But, you know, keep your head on and just relax and just, you know, look at the targets. That's really what it boils down to.
Well, one of the reasons I was very excited to talk to you is you're a Kohler shooter like I am.
Yeah.
So, I was all excited about that. Are you sponsored by Kohler?
Yes, I am a sponsored Kohler shooter.
Awesome. Right. And do you shoot the Maxlite Sporting or do you shoot the new flat rub?
No, right now I'm shooting an older 750 bore.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so this 754 bore, 34-inch barrels.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Okay. So my preference is 34-inch barrels, and so that's what I've been shooting.
Are you screw and choke or fixed choke?
I'm screwing chokes, but for the most part, I put 220s in and just leave them.
Just leave them?
Yeah. It's a confidence thing for me. You know, unless I get like a really close, you know, hoppy little rabbit out there at about 10 yards. Yeah, I might put something else in, or I might grab a spreader shell or something like that for something, you know, really close like that.
Factory chokes?
No, I'm shooting extremes.
Oh, okay.
Gotcha. But yeah, for the most part, it's just 220s for the most part. Most everything.
What shell are you shooting?
My go-to shell is it's the Remington Nitro, the 1235 ounce and an eighth, seven and a halves. But those are getting really hard to find right now. And lately I've kind of transitioned over to some of the game bores. The game bore Evo at the 1250 ounce and eighth.
Really?
I've been shooting those and with really good results.
So you're an ounce and an eighth shooter then?
Ounce and eighth for everything, yep.
Gotcha. And seven and a half for everything?
Seven and a half for everything.
Gotcha.
Keep it simple.
Glasses.
Yep.
What kind of glasses are you using?
So I shoot the Pilas. I think it's the Tomcats. I shoot prescription, but for the most part, I use two different lenses. I use a darker lens for, you know, during the day. If it gets cloudy or an overcast or at night, I'll put a light yellow in, and that's pretty much it.
Gotcha. So here's an odd question. After you miss a target, and this is where I personally struggle, and I know a lot of people listening struggle with this. After you miss a target, you know, for me, I get mad, you know, and that's common. You see everybody throwing shells and everything. How do you overcome that and refocus and set for the next pair? What would you recommend to a shooter that's getting into this and starting to compete? How do you overcome that? How do you stay focused and move on?
Yeah, a really good question. So the first thing is don't get upset. Getting upset and getting emotional about a target will cost you a lot more targets. So you really just got to, you know, reanalyze, reset, figure out what you did wrong. For the most part, you know, I know what I've done wrong, and I think most people do, and they just get frustrated. Yeah. You can't get frustrated. You just got to relax, understand that you got to do something different next time. You're either going to shoot it later, shoot it earlier. You're going to, you know, give it some more lead. You're going to, you know, do something different.
Right.
You got to do something different, to break that target. And like I said, for the most part, you just got to relax and, you know, kind of laugh it off and, you know, go into it with a positive attitude, knowing that you can break the target.
Right.
You know, it's not the target, it's your mindset that would prevent you from breaking that target, because most of the guys out here, you know, they can break targets.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's just, you know, getting in there and not getting frustrated, letting it happen.
So that kind of leads into my next one. What is your pre-shot routine? How do you focus between pairs or even coming into a station? Obviously, you probably maintain the same pre-shot routine through everything, but what does your pre-shot routine consist of? What goes through Chris's mind to prepare you for that shot?
Yeah, so you know, there's kind of two parts to that. There's the planning part, and then there's the actual pre-shot routine. And this is strictly pre-shot routine, and I don't spend a whole lot of time on that. You know, it if I spend too much time, I get, you know, too much thinking going on, and I don't want to have too much thinking. I want to know exactly. I want to do just enough to know exactly what I want to do with that pair or that target, whatever it is. And then once I have that confidence that I know exactly what I'm going to do, what my whole point is, where I'm going to break it, really seeing it, you know, then it's just a matter of really focusing on where I'm going to see that target, where I'm going to break it, you know, what that feel's going to be once I put the gun up.
Right.
And then just, you know, I just kind of blank out at that point and just let it happen.
Right. Well, I know you're busy, man. I don't want to keep you too long. One last question for you.
Yep.
If you could give a new shooter that's taking sporting clays and they're taking that big step to be a competitive shooter, if you give them one piece of advice, what would that be?
Get lessons.
Yeah.
Get lessons.
It's definitely a shortcut, isn't it?
It is definitely a shortcut. I see guys go out there, they will burn up a lot of shells with some really poor fundamentals. You know, they their feet are wrong, their hold points are wrong, their look points are wrong, break points are wrong. And it's really, you know, getting with an instructor that's going to give you something to work on until that next lesson. So it's just, you know, knocking little things down at a time, getting your stance set up right, knowing exactly what you're going to do, you know, what kind of, you know, methods you're going to use,
right,
you know, really looking at the target, hold points, break points. I mean, it's really simple. You know, we try to make it really complex, but it's really simple. It's just getting in front of the target and breaking it and really having a detailed plan of how you want to attack that target. And you can build that, you know, working with your instructor. Again, they should be giving you some homework to go back. You work on those things. Once you feel like you've worked on those things and you got them, you know, down pat, then it's time to get back with that instructor and then work on the next thing, just knocking things down one at a time.
Absolutely. Well, Chris, thank you very much for sitting down with us. I appreciate it. Good luck to you the rest of the weekend.
Appreciate it.
Like to see you up there in the top of the stats.
Yep.
And we will definitely be catching up with you soon.
I appreciate it. Yep.
So, and good luck next weekend at the Southeast Regional.
Regional, yep. So, I'll be back for that as well.
Awesome. Yep. Thank you, Chris.
Thank you.
All right, Jason Rambo. I'm here with Mike Lagano. Mike, thank you for taking a few minutes to talk to us. You and Doug Vine kind of split target setting duties here at the Florida State. What all are you setting, or what all have you set?
Yes, sir. I've set the orange prelim, the orange main, competition five stands, both of them, and then me and Doug split the super sporting up.
Okay.
He did the odd stations, I did the even, and that's pretty much what we set.
And then I think he also set the feet task, is that
correct? Yeah, he set the feet, all the feet tasks, yes, sir.
Gotcha. So, tell me a little bit about what's gone into getting ready for this. I mean, you know, I talked to Rick here a little bit ago. He told me he had to bring some additional traps, but how many boxes of clays? What kind of staffing does it take to put this on?
Yeah, I mean, it's a big event. You know, boxes of clays. I know we had 4 truckloads come in. We probably put out so far a truck and a half load of targets. You know, prepping it, staging it. You know, kind of work together. You know, in my opinion, you take anybody that's involved with Pro-Matic, they're first class, you know what I mean? They'll do whatever it takes to get it done. They'll help out. They might come in with traps, but they'll help us load. And there's a lot of prep work from referees. I mean, I could go on all day getting sponsorships down to, you know, making sure you got water on the course.
Yeah.
Shuttles, you know. We can go all day about it, yep.
One of the questions I asked Rick, you know, we're on this podcast, we're all about helping the new guy get started, or maybe the guy that's been shooting for a little bit, trying to get him to take that leap of faith and go to some of these bigger shoots.
You know, I came down here from Ohio, and Sean and I kind of did an episode on traveling with a shotgun. That was new to me, and we talked to some people about that. We talked to Malcolm Parker about coming to this club because I've never been to it. What piece of advice would you give a shooter that's going to a big shoot like this? Maybe a common mistake you've seen, or maybe they planned wrong or whatever. What kind of advice would you give to a shooter that wants to come to an event like this?
Yeah, I mean, just the biggest advice I can give everybody, just go. You know, when I was a younger shooter, I said, how do I get better? You know, I had a couple mentors, one of them being Anthony Matarese, and I asked him one day, how do I get better? You know, and you just got to shoot the events. Just go. Don't be afraid. A lot of shooters get stuck on a score. You know, like they might shoot at their local club. They're familiar with the grounds, the stands, the lighting, and they might get stuck on a number. Man, they could shoot an 85 at their club. They go to a big event and they shoot a 60. They don't want to come back. Well, next time you can shoot 65. Next thing you know, you're shooting. You know, when I started shooting, you know, I wasn't good at it. You know, and I just went. I just took it on the chin. I call it, you know, and go, go, go. And okay, how do I get better and learn and practice? I recommend practice to everybody. Practice as much as you can and practice with a purpose.
Right.
Don't go out there just shooting a gun. But the biggest, you know, back to the main question, go. I mean, there's nothing. Yeah. Don't worry about a number. Go for the experience. Go for the, you know, the fellowship. You know,
yeah,
go
absolutely.
For learning. See new targets you've never seen. And then, you know, that's the main gig. You know, you'll get better. You know, with time.
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, Sean and I have talked about that. We're kind of spoiled in Ohio between, you know, the Cardinal Center and then Dan Bailey's got Eagles Nest and Hillendale. And we got some really good clubs. Man, when you get out to a club like this, it's experience. You know, we got bad weather in Ohio. I come down here, it's beautiful weather. It's a whole new club I've never seen. Meet new people, make new friends. So, yeah, it's all about the experience. I know you do a lot with the youth shooting.
Yes, sir.
What can we do as a whole to kind of change the dynamic? There seems to be this big separation from SCTP to NSCA. Do you see something, maybe one thing that's lacking that maybe helped that carry over that they can continue shooting after SCTP?
Yeah, so there's two things we face. So, you know, my partner, my boss man, David Chestnut, he founded years ago the South Carolina Youth Shooting Foundation. Now we're huge. I mean, we're the largest standalone shooting foundation in a single state, in South Carolina. You know, we're almost over 1,000 kids now.
Wow. Right?
Just out of one state. So we're big into that. I think the biggest thing is that we struggle with as well is when we get all these youth shooters, they love it. And then they go along to college and they're getting their engineering degree, and then we don't see Johnny anymore, you know? That's our biggest struggle is not actually getting the shooters involved and getting the support. The biggest struggle is getting them returned, like, you know, going to the NSCA. So one of the things I did this year, we have an annual meeting every year. First meeting's all the clubs that are involved in the Youth Shooting Foundation. And the second meeting is the coaches meeting. So I actually gave a speech at the coaches meeting. And you would be surprised how many coaches didn't even know what the NSCA was.
Wow.
So I talked about what the NSCA was, how I started in the NSCA as a kid. We didn't have all these programs, and I just shot with, you know, my older friends and, you know, hitched a ride to the shoots. And, you know, we've had different prodigies come out of the South Carolina Youth Shooting Foundation, like, you know, Turner Parcell. Right now, he's in All-American points. He's the captain. He's going to be the captain and a chance to win the championship tour. He didn't know anything about the NSCA. He started shooting the Youth Shooting Foundation, and boom. Now he's, you know, because of that foundation, we're trying to convert these kids, you know, and get them to shoot both. And I tell them, guys, if you go out there and shoot registered targets, when you go to a youth shoot, you're going to look like a hero.
Yeah,
you know, they're going to look like trash can lids compared. Right. So that's just one example. You know, Jackson Louder, some Florida examples. You know, you got Rihanna Franz, you know, one of the best shooters in the country, Joe Finese. He came out of Young Guns of Quail Creek. Todd Hitch, he came out of a youth shooting team out of Tennessee. A lot of great kids. So we want to find more of those.
Right.
And then for us guys, you know, getting older, we're in trouble.
Yeah.
You know, if we get them, we're in trouble, which I love to see it, but we haven't found that million-dollar answer yet of how we're going to get these kids to continue. We have them in the program. We just got to maybe work on the next phase is keeping them shooting. You know? But you shooting is, so I'm a big fan of you shooting. I always have been. I got a soft spot for the kids.
Oh, yeah, me too.
Yep, I promote it. You know, arguably have done more for the youth kids than anybody out there as far as the instruction side and stuff like that.
Well, you know, it seems like, and I know it was a case for me and a lot of my friends, we started shooting sporting clays in the mid-90s.
Yeah.
Life happens. You know, we left the sport, but we came back to it. What my fear is these kids are in the SCTP, and of course they go off to college, and, you know, girls and cars and all that other stuff gets in the way, and they get away from the sport, but I think it's important to know that there's still something for them to come back to. You know, the NSCA is obviously what they can come back to. They left SCTP. If they want to get out of the sport and they want to come back later, they can come back to NSCA. Of course, obviously, we'd like to see them stay with it no matter what.
Yeah, that's what I tell people. I said the great part, what I love about sporting clays in particular, you know, like when I played high school football and baseball, it was very good. But I was never big enough, fast enough, strong enough, right? So I'm not going to go play for Alabama, where, you know, a couple friends of mine could. But then they're not going to go play for the Pittsburgh Steelers, right? So the cool part about sporting clays and what I love about it, I said, you can do this forever, right? And then guys will come up to me, oh, Mike, we can't compete anymore in Master. I said, well, be the best super vet out there. You know, compete, you know, we have that classification system, so that's important too. I think it's the greatest sport. You can do it forever. Yeah. And the other thing is recreational shooting. You know, we never talk about that. Recreational shooting is something anybody can do anytime. You know, twice a year, my wife's like, I want to go shoot.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what? You know, you never shoot.
Right.
Well, let's go. So if we can get more of that, just they've got to know shooting's always there. And we're very fortunate here in the United States to have awesome gun clubs.
Oh,
like you said, you know, in Ohio, Florida, South Carolina, Georgia, tons of great clubs.
Absolutely.
North Carolina, you know, we're lucky.
Yes, we are. And that's, you know, that's funny you were talking about football and all that stuff. That clay target's a great equalizer. You know, it doesn't care how big or how fast you are or how young or how old you are. It's a great equalizer. Everybody's got to shoot the same target. And the thing that I've been talking to a lot of parents and, they're intrigued by it, but they're just not sure if they want to get little Bobby into it. I tell them all the same thing. Statistically, it's the safest sport in the world.
Absolutely.
You know, you can't go to a high school football game without one of them leaving on a stretcher. You can't go to a high school basketball game without one of them breaking an ankle or whatever. There's no injuries in sporting clays. As long as they have that foundation of safety, it's going to be a sport they can enjoy forever and not get hurt. And I've seen people here today that could barely pick up a gun. They're such a little kid. But they're out there breaking clays and having a good time. And I've seen the older gentleman that's just darn near with a walker getting up into the box that he's still having fun too. So
it's the greatest thing. Like you said, that's what I tell people, you know, our gun club, Rocky Creek Sporting Clays, you know, it's funny in my safety speeches, I said, guys, if you follow everything I just told you, you know, with the new corporate group and stuff, I said, this is safer than getting in your pickup truck and driving down the highway.
Absolutely.
Right. This is the safest thing. If you follow the rules, this is the safest thing going. And that's what a lot of people get nervous about, and that's one of the things we strive for in you shooting too. It's not like, okay, did we have the best targets? Did we have the best? No, did we have a safe shoot? That's
right,
our big
right,
thing, you know.
Right.
Because, and I've watched so many kids. You know, I've seen a ton of them here this weekend. My old Florida crew, miss those guys, but I see them now. They're in college. They're grown up. They've got facial hair.
Right.
It's funny to see. I just saw Joseph Pinchin, and I go, man, you're taller than me now, you know. So it's pretty neat to see those guys, people like that still in it. And, you know, they're becoming awesome. You know, like I said, I think kids that are involved in shooting are some of our next people in the world. You know, running businesses, attorneys, engineers, they're very smart. And I think because of that safety and responsibility, they've learned that from shooting.
Right.
It's taken them into the real world.
Absolutely.
It's excellent.
Absolutely. Well, I know you work with the youth. But do you do any private coaching?
Yes, sir. A lot of private coaching. You know, like I said, a prodigy of Anthony Matarese, you know, grew up in the same area. That was my home gun club, one of them in that area.
Well, if somebody's interested in taking lessons from you, tell us how we can get a hold of you.
Yes, sir. So I teach all at Rocky Creek Sporting Clays. It's in Richburg, South Carolina. You know, you can look it up right on the website. my numbers on there, do a lot of lessons. We've got a fantastic program there. And I even have some instructors that work underneath me to get, you know, the foundation started. Yeah. So that's Rocky Creek Sporting Clays. That's where I teach you how to.
Cool. Well, Mike, I know you're a very busy man. You got a very big plate full, and I appreciate you spending a couple minutes with us. Like to follow up with you here in a couple months. We got some episodes planned out, but like to get you back on, talk a little bit more extensively about all this. So, but really do appreciate it very much.
Absolutely. No problem.
Good deal. Thanks,
Mike. Thank you, sir.
All right, Rick, we caught up here with Rick Hemingway at the Florida State Shoot. Rick, tell us what's going on. You said you are not here setting targets today, so what are you up to?
Yeah, it's a little unusual. I got a call about a month ago that they needed some extra traps down here for this event, so I've got about 126 traps here this weekend. I arrived Saturday night, and we began setting on Sunday, and really all I'm doing is providing traps and providing technical support for the house traps to make sure everything runs to the best of our knowledge. Mike Loguano from Rocky Creek in South Carolina and Doug Vine from here in Florida are the two target setters for the whole event.
Wow. Do you know off the top of your head how many traps are here set up now? I know you said you brought 125.
231.
Wow. That's incredible. And off the top of your head, would you have how many targets that's going to relate to over the course of the weekend? I know it varies per competitors.
Yeah, I don't write off. The numbers have dropped a little bit, which is kind of disappointing. We're floating around about 405, a little 400 in the main early in the week. And when the no-shows and cancellations finally have kind of weeded themselves out, it's dropped down to in the 370s, 380 mark. Which is a little disappointing. It takes about the same amount of work. If we had 500 this weekend, we wouldn't have done anything any different other than adding a few more targets per machine. So with that said, you know, we'd like to have a full house and when you try to put on a shoot of this magnitude.
Right.
I would say roughly they're probably somewhere around 200,000 target mark, give or take. 175,000, 225,000 targets they'll probably throw this week.
Wow, that's incredible. Now, you know, you and I know each other because you came up to Cardinal. You know, you were there setting the state this year. You set the state last year and the regional last year.
Correct.
You set targets all over the country.
I do.
This is the first time you've been here to Blackjack.
Absolutely.
What stands out to you? What do you think?
The course is magnificent. I mean, it's a gorgeous layout. The paved cart paths, the covered chute stands, the nice walkways, the covered chute stands were placed far enough off of the paved cart path to really, for all the traffic going by, to really not bother you that much. There's some temporary stations just placed a little closer, but overall, it's a very well laid out, especially for recreational everyday use. It's probably one of the nicest clubs I've been to in a long time for the actual courses themselves. For recreational uses, I mean, to have three courses the way it's laid out is absolutely perfect. So it gets a little congested for this size event because the course doesn't flow in a circular manner. They kind of got a dead end. They all start at 1 and they go to 15 and then you have to go back through traffic, get back to 1, which I don't prefer. But you don't always get the best of everything.
Right.
But overall, it's a gorgeous, magnificent club, very convenient to motels and restaurants, and it's a shooter's dream, in my opinion.
Well, it's the first time I've ever been here, and I'm blown away. I mean, it was awesome. You know, the terrain, you get a good variety around this course, that's for sure. Well, the whole entire club. But, so, Rick, you know, our podcast our sole focus is to try and help the new guy come in.
Absolutely.
What's something, as a target setter and a guy that sets courses all over the country, what's the one common mistake you see from a shooter, or maybe something he didn't do to prepare right, or maybe he's shooting too much? What's the one common mistake you can help a guy out that's going to a big shoot like this?
The biggest mistake I see pretty much consistently is new shooters, even more experienced shooters, they both have the same mentality that they need to shoot faster, longer distance targets for practice. When they really get mastered the basic hoarding away trap style targets, incomers, killing 90%+ of them, having a lot of confidence in those type targets, and they kind of didn't think they needed to put much effort and concentration on those type targets, so they jumped into it and wanted to focus more on targets they don't see a lot of.
Right.
And they lose their shoot or their classification, whatever class they may be shooting in, if they'll just replay what they missed and realize that if they just killed that 90-95% of the basic targets that they should have hit on any given day, then they would have more than likely been a factor to place or win their class. So that's a common thing I see, is people put too much effort in more difficult targets that's really not what's going to cause them to lose the tournament. What's going to cause them to lose the tournament is your basic targets that you should kill every given day by not really concentration, not they didn't practice, they didn't have the right mentality going into that shoot. Tournament, they get to the first station, they're all nervous because it's a tournament, then it's basically no different than shooting yesterday at a practice range. You should have the same mentality.
Yeah, if, you know, that
everybody gets really kind of conscientious about a tournament and get kind of choked up, so to speak, when it's really not necessary. And it comes with experience. I mean, to be honest with you, it's nothing you can teach or anybody can teach you to do. It's just something you've got to do to get experience to get over that. You can't. A lot of people have a negative mentality. They miss a target or two, and they just go downhill from there. That's something you just take in stride. It happens. Nobody's perfect. There's going to be a lot of missing happen. It's just who misses the least amount wins the tournament. So don't ever give up too soon.
Right. Yeah, no, that's well said, because, you know, I shot Super Sporting yesterday. And, yeah, there's a couple big boy targets here and there, and I did okay on those. But my misses came from the easy ones I shouldn't have missed.
Absolutely.
And I see that a lot. I see guys go out and practice big targets, and these tournaments are not necessarily, I mean, this isn't a world championship. You
get programmed to big targets and big leads. It's really hard to come back to shooting right at the front edge of a target or right at a target for that speed. So that's a common problem you see, and all that comes with moving the speed of the target,
right.
In my opinion. And then again, you know, I see a lot of people, they're really, when they get in the box or before they get in the box, they don't really have a plan of saying, okay, trap A is a teal going up and away, but trap B is a low trap shot going away. So when they shoot the teal, which gets the gun up high, they don't have the thought process of where that gun should go for the second target before they call pull for the pair. So they are hunting the second one by saying, oh, I forgot where it was going. Well, it's because they didn't have a plan for that, which caused the gun to be out of position. They said, oh my God, that bird's going away. I just got to. So he's kind of poking hope at the second target.
Right.
And they lost the target right there. They should have not have done if they had put a little effort in thinking about what the game plan was and having a game plan before they called pull on the first pair.
Do you think, that being said, that's why you come up with some of your, I call them tricky targets, but I mean, you've had everything from off of trampolines to targets with no spring just drop right out of a tower and fall. Do you think that's what gave you some of that idea, some of that thought process for some of these targets?
Some of the things that I've tried to trick shooters on is to get the gun out of position from the first shot, having to go to the second shot. But, you know, I'm really not, when I'm setting targets, I'm really not trying to say, okay, I'm going to really mess you up on this station.
Right.
That's not my mentality.
Right.
My mentality is to be different than what it was yesterday, last week, last month, or ever been on that course, if I can figure out by looking at shot up trees, by looking at targets on the ground, trying to figure out, okay, I can look at this club. That club's not really experienced on moving targets. That rabbit looks like it's been there for 10 years. That rabbit's going either on another course or somewhere way on that course different.
Right.
So I'm just trying to be different than what you get on every given day. I feel like a tournament should be a test of your ability to retarget presentations and execute.
Right.
So in my opinion, it should not be the same course that you shoot on any given day. If that's the case, they should not be hiring me as a target setter.
Right.
They should just leave it like it is, shoot the same thing you shot yesterday, and hope for the best.
Right.
But the mentality of the, well, it's not the mentality, but it's more disadvantaged to some shooters because they shoot at small clubs. the clubs have to have the recreational shooters to be successful, to be able to keep, afford to keep the doors open. The tournament shooters will never support a club alone. So they have to be dependent on recreational shooters in the corporate groups. We're doing that. You have to have what we call corporate targets, which are really slow, close, you know, all dome, all valley, something big targets
soft for them targets.
To shoot at to let the novice shooters really break a lot of targets, because a lot of these customers only shoot once or twice a year.
Right.
So we want them to have fun and enjoy the experience and then come back and do it again. Well, if you've got a small club that only has one course, they don't have the capabilities to provide the tight targets that their members, they may only have a handful of members that shoot competitively, but those competitive shooters at that particular club, they're a little bit disadvantaged when they come to a major shoot, such as a state shoot or a regional or U.S. Open or national, which in that order, I feel like targets should be ramped up for.
Yes.
I mean, a fun shoot, you got a level of targets. You've got a state shoot, which is a more difficult level, in my opinion. You got a regional, which is even a little heavier than a state. Then you go to a U.S. Open. Then you go to a national. It doesn't always work that way, because depending on what club you got and who the target setters are, everybody has a different mentality. And we don't have blueprints to go by. We're pretty much free to do what we want to do in this sport. So it's not like skeet and trap, where every place you go is going to be identical in blueprint.
Right.
Which I think makes the game the most fun.
Absolutely.
But at the same time, you know, that's kind of why some shooters have a disadvantage. They say, oh, Rick, you threw some stuff I've never seen before. Well, it's not, wasn't that difficult. It's just that they come from a small club. They
right.
just don't have that opportunity, and there's really not a fix for it, to be honest with you.
Well,
there's really no solution, you know, to do that. I don't think you should have a state championship and shoot corporate style targets, in my opinion.
Well, that's.
And I think that the mentality of the shooters should not be on what their score was.
Right.
The mentality of the shooters should be on how they finished in their class.
Right.
But majority, and it's really got more and more popular in the last 3 to 5 years, that targets overall are probably a little easier than they've ever been before. And it's because of social media. Shooter's mentality, oh, I shot a 95 in practice yesterday on my course, and I came here and shot 85 today, I had a terrible day. That should not be the case.
No.
What I would prefer that shooter tell me, I shot an 85 and I finished third in my class, or, you know, 88 was high in my class and I shot an 85. I should have got three more birds. That's what I want to hear.
Right.
But instead of saying, oh, I shot terrible, I shot 85, score is irrelevant. It's how you finish in your class, because you're going to competition and it should be going to potentially win your course, win your.
Yeah,
but
I think
the biggest variety of clientele we have, where we have, which I'm taking a shot, gut shot, at 85% of the shooters even here this weekend, didn't practice last week, didn't practice last month. It's a social event. It's Florida State. I'm going, my buddies are going, so, you know, I hope it'd be nice if I win, but I'm probably decide I'm going for a social side. Well, when you've got 15% that's really diehard competitive, just spending thousands of dollars to practice every week, get lessons, buy guns, buy ammo, they would like to be challenged with target quality.
Right.
And then you've got 80% that they just go on social shoot, so they just want to break a lot of targets.
Right.
So it's very, very difficult for
it's
a target setter
line.
Now.
Yeah.
It's harder to set targets now than it's ever been before to try to satisfy both clientele, so to speak.
Right.
Or both caliber shooters.
That's what we're trying to encourage is the experience. It's not, you know, people get hung up on a score really easy. And, you know, for me, you know, I left home, there's 6 inches of snow and 30 degrees. I'm in heaven right now. You know, this weather's great.
Absolutely.
We got a great club here. But, like I said, I think people get hung up on the score too much and they need to worry more about the experience. And that being said, that gives us you're in the entertainment business. It's your job to make sure everybody has a good time. And I think you're right. People get hung up on their score too much instead of, well, hey, I've never seen a target like that. Well, that should have been the cool factor, you know, instead
exactly.
They're worried about the score factor. So,
exactly.
But, Rick, listen, I know you're extremely busy. I don't want to take too much more of your time. Tell us about your club. I know you have a club.
Backwoods Quail Club out of Georgetown, South Carolina. I've been in business, opened the course in 1992. In fact, we were laughing about it a while ago. I put my first... When I initially opened, I put my course in for $8,500. And it was all manual traps, and I didn't know any better then, so I thought every time sporting clays was new to everybody in South Carolina, so everybody came to shoot in my club. As the owner, as the club pro, so to speak. I felt like I had to go shoot with every new shooter, so I about shot myself in the foot by shooting all my profit up. But I felt like I was probably shooting 400 or 500 targets a day when I first opened up.
Wow.
But kind of got into business to because I was already in the hunting, commercial hunting operation, doing quail and deer hunting. And when I found out about sporting clays, I just couldn't wait to open one. Of course, I had to have it. So then I got into that, and then I started renting a few traps to pay for my competitive shooting habit. And gun club started conning me and setting targets because they were getting 2-for-1. They already had to get trapped from me, so if they get me set targets, that saved me some expense. So instead of my plan didn't work out to be able to pay for my shooting habit. Now I hardly even get a shoot. I'm on the road here now 2 weeks doing Florida State as well as the Southeast Regional, and I've got 125 traps here, and so to speak, and don't even have a shotgun with me. So it didn't work out exactly as I planned, but it's been an incredible career that I could never have asked to enjoy so much. It never feels like work. I got out here this morning about 6:30 to do some prep before the shooters got here to make sure everything worked great today, we hope, and trouble-free. And I may want to get out of here at 6-7 o'clock tonight. So it may be a 12-14 hour day, but never feels like work.
Yeah.
The whole shooting industry is one great big family. I see a lot of the same shooters week in, week out. But as I travel, shoot, provide traps, I see the same shooters. So it's just one great big family that travels around the country. And I couldn't ask for a better career and be associated with such nice people in the industry.
Now, if somebody wants to come see your club, or they want to shoot at your club, or I don't know if you still provide hunting or not, but how can they find you?
You can find us at www.backwoodsquailclub.com. My office phone number is 843-546-1466. We're open 8 to 5, 7 days a week. We do close for Christmas, Thanksgiving, and New Year's. Other than that, we'll be there. We happen to be the host club for the 2022 U.S. Open.
Nice.
That we're excited about. We held it in 2013, so this will be our second round for hosting it. And I travel all over the country selling and installing Pro-Matic traps as well. So
nice.
I'm a jack of all trades and a master of none, I like to say, but if you do anything with a shotgun, I've got some part of my business that can satisfy your needs.
There you go. I think you just had a post recently on Facebook. You've got some used traps for sale,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, at the end of the year, we start moving traps to replace them on a mobile trailer that we are trying to keep new equipment on our trailers all the time. So this time of year, we're always moving traps that we use throughout the year. However, this year, they've not been used as much as in the past due to COVID. We took about 5 months off there by starting in late March. We really didn't do but one shoot between there and basically October.
Wow.
So it was really slow times there where the shoots were getting postponed or canceled for this year, but everything seems to be getting back to normal, and we just keeping our fingers crossed that whatever president we have come January, we'll keep everything open, and obviously the business is really good. I mean, everybody you talk to, business, the economy's really good, business really good. If we just don't get a setback from any kind of presidential disturbance, hopefully we'll get everything back to normal in this country and get our lives back to normal.
Well, we greatly appreciate you taking a few minutes with us, Rick. We really do appreciate
Absolutely,
it.
Jason. Appreciate you asking me, and enjoy being on your podcast, and wish you nothing but the very best for the future.
Well, thank you. Appreciate that very much.
Absolutely.
Thank you, Rick. Mm-hmm.
Wow, that was a lot of great information. I can't believe you caught up with so many people. That was a lot of legwork on your part.
Yeah, well, I had a little insight on that. Miss Melanie Parker was so gracious to help us out, and she introduced me to a lot of people. In fact, she introduced me to Chris Ferris. So I was very thankful. She was willing to help. They want to help the sport grow, and they think what we're doing is great. So really, big shout out to Miss Melanie. I really appreciate that.
Yeah, once again, that stands a testament of this sport. I mean, there's just so many people out there that want nothing but the best for everybody else. You know, make shooters better, make them more educated, and definitely hopefully learn and teach new shooters how to get into the sport and get better.
Absolutely. Well, okay, I gave everybody a teaser. We're going to do a giveaway, Sean.
Woo-hoo!
So Breakpoint Shooting Instruction is sponsoring this giveaway.
Thank you, Chad Roberts, right?
Yes, thank you, Chad. We are going to give away 2 full-blown NSCA memberships.
Nice.
Now, this is the full membership, not the complimentary one. You're going to get the printed magazine, not the digital one. You're going to enjoy all the benefits of being an NSCA member. So Okay, a couple rules here. Number one, you cannot be a current NSCA member. This is not for renewal. This is for new membership only.
Okay, so the winner has to be a non-registered shooter at this point.
That is correct. So if you are a registered member, but you know someone that is not, that has been toying with the notion of maybe shooting at their first tournament, we greatly encourage them to be members, and that's why we're doing this. And again, thank you, Chad, for helping us out with this. So we are going to give away two full-blown NSCA memberships with a swag pack, as Chad put it, from Breakpoint Shooting Instruction. The rules of the contest are simple. Number one, you can't be an NSCA member. Number two, you have to go to the website, our website, thedeadpair.com, and click on the contact button. You send us an email with your name, address, and phone number, and you have to tell us what you like about the Dead Pair podcast.
Nice. Easy enough.
Yes. And Sean, I'm tasking him with this, is going to write down everyone's name on the same size piece of paper. We're going to put it in a box. And when we have an in-studio guest, we're going to shake that box up and draw two names out of that box, and we'll announce let's just say we'll announce their first name, and we'll contact the people. We don't want to announce anybody's full name and address on the
And contract. By writing down, what's really going to happen is I'm going to print it off, cut up the names, and put them in there. I'm not writing all those names down, so right. Hopefully we get a lot of replies.
Right. So, but anyway, we're going to give you a little bit of time on this. So we'll be announcing it again over the next couple of episodes, and we're going to announce the winner right after the first of the year, our first podcast of 2021. That way they can get their membership going immediately.
Yep.
We're going to put you in contact with Chad Roberts, and we'll let him know who the two winners are, so he's expecting their phone calls. And he's going to get you the swag pack. I think he's talked about like a hat and T-shirt and some stickers and some other little goodies from Breakpoint Shooting Instruction. And,
I'm sure it'd be cool stuff. I know Chad, so that's going to be his main MO, get some cool stuff to the shooters.
Absolutely. But, this is part of what we want to do. This is why we started this. We want to see the NSCA grow. We want to see people go out and enjoy busting some clays. So this is a start of how we're going to give back.
Yeah. And speaking of that, I mean, up here in the northern states, we're getting into the cold, nasty weather. I've got one last tournament to shoot this weekend up at Hillendale in Medina, Ohio. I know it's going to be cold. Looks like forecast is calling for a mix of rain and maybe icy rain. I don't know about snow, but it's going to be probably yucky. So, you know, one of the questions we have up here in the north, where you're not as lucky to live in the great state of Florida, where the weather's pretty nice all year round, what do you do in the wintertime? You know, I mean, how do you practice? How do you go out? I mean, nobody's going to go out there when it's blowing 30 miles an hour and it's 20 below and, you know, nobody does that. So,
Don't say nobody, because 2 years ago at the night shoot, that was us.
Yeah, you're right. But for the most part, I mean, we're going to be talking here real soon about things you can do. If you're in the northern states, you know, Ohio, Michigan, New York, Pennsylvania, you know who you are, Wisconsin, Minnesota, you know, you're kind of trapped inside. So we're going to have an episode talking with hopefully a guest that can give us some ideas and some good practice tips, things you can do inside your house or things you can do that don't necessarily require you to go outside into the elements.
Right, and if you are going to go out into the elements and shoot, let me make a suggestion. Don't be like Sean and I and dress up in Carhartts and five layers of clothes and all of a sudden your gun fits way off. You know?
Maybe it's just best to learn it the hard way.
Right, but there is some outdoor stores you can go to. I don't want to name names, but good base layers pay dividends.
Yeah.
And just go out there and, you know, Dan's a good example. Eagle's Nest, they got some 50 bird tournaments that they throw in the winter, so you're not out there for 2 hours at a time.
Short tournaments.
Right.
And I know a lot of the clubs will have an enclosed 5-stand area where they might have some heaters in there. I know Hillendale does it in the winter. They enclose their 5-stand canopy. And they usually put some propane heaters in there. So it's not terrible. If you want to go out there and shoot, you're able to do that. Not every club's going to have that ability, but some do. So definitely check around your area and see if anybody has a way to get out of the weather and at least, you know, still keep the gun moving and still shoot at some birds.
Absolutely. That's the one downer about living up here is, you know, this is our time of the year to go out and really practice and practice and practice to get ready for tournament season. Now, I know Florida's getting ready to start their full swing. Mm-hmm. I know that the Southeast Regional – is wrapping up right now, and then they go into, you got Gator Cup, Caribbean Classic, I think Krieghoff Classic. It's the whole Florida swing, if you will. And So it's prime time shooting for them. But up here, it's, you know, people kind of put the gun away and sing a little sob story about why they can't go out and shoot. But that's not right. True. If you do what Sean said, there's some drills you can do in the house. There is, you know, you can dress properly and go out and shoot for a little bit. And don't take snow for an answer.
Yeah, so. That's a good one. Snow for an answer. All right, yeah. I can remember that one.
Okay, he's writing that down. See?
I am.
You're just envious, aren't you?
You got your full of good ideas, man.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's like I tell my wife. You're going to have to accept the fact that I'm a luscious hunk of man meat, Sean.
Oh, jeez. All right, back on track.
So, anyway, hey, it's my lie. I'll tell it any way I want, okay?
And you tell it well.
Yes, thank you. So... But anyway, what's next for you, Mr. Alley? I know you said something about shooting this weekend. What's your future plans?
Yeah, Hillendale's having their December tournament. Looks like going to be a great turnout. I think, if I didn't see it wrong, maybe close to 150, 200 people.
Are you serious?
Yeah. So it's going to be definitely a big shoot. And that's a great club. It's a private club, number one. I'm not a member. So the only time I get to go shoot there is when they have a tournament. And they right. haven't had very many this year because of the whole COVID situation. So anytime I get a chance to go up there, it's a fantastic facility. They always throw some great targets. And me and a couple other guys are going to go up there and finish the year out, basically. And then we'll probably be March, April before we really get out there for real again. I know Dan at Eagle's Nest, Dan Bailey at Eagle's Nest will throw some short tournaments if the weather's permitting, and if the things are right, I'll go out there and maybe shoot one or two of those as well. But you know, it's going to be a little bit of a wait before the good weather comes back to Ohio.
Gotcha. Well, I just happen to know an individual that's going to throw his own little five stand this winter. So.
Oh, really? He wouldn't be in this room, would he?
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe. The fees will be cheap, I'm sure.
So. Yeah, I bet.
Well, and we know what? That's something else we're going to talk about too. We got a really cool guest coming up here shortly. We're going to talk about buying your own thrower and getting some practice in at home.
Yeah.
If you have the land, you have the ability to do it, why not? Right. I mean, I know the clubs don't want to hear me say that. You know, they want you to come shoot at their club. And, you know, I mean, honestly, you're not going to get as many targets at home as you will at a club. But if you're like me and you work sun up to sundown and, you know, summertime clubs are closing, last guy out at 5 o'clock, and sometimes it's light out till darn near 10 o'clock, and it's great. I got set my throwers up and, you know, get a good hour and a half practice in. So.
Yeah. Well, and not to mention, you know, not everybody might be as lucky as we are where we've got about four or five clubs within an hour drive of us. I mean, places they might have to drive 2-3 hours to get to a club to be able to shoot. So it makes a lot of sense to have your own thrower because at least you can do some practicing in your own backyard if that's a possibility.
Absolutely. And if you are going to take the big step and buy your own thrower, you might want to check out usatrapcarts.com.
Yeah, that's a great place to go. The guy builds some nice trap carts. I know that for a fact.
Cool. Well, Sean, this has been awesome. I don't want to run too long here. We got a lot of work to do. We got some really cool guests coming in on our next episode. They're going to be in studio with us. That'll be our first time having in studio guests. That'll be fun.
Yeah, that'll be a lot of fun. And just to mention to all of our listeners out there, we really appreciate you. We really want to hear from you too. If you've got ideas for the show, if you've got any questions, feel free to email us. Once again, go to thedeadpair.com, click on the contact us button, send us an email. You know, if you want to hear something about a certain topic that we haven't talked about yet. There's going to be a lot coming, but we always are open-minded to ideas and suggestions, and we'd love to be able to answer some of your questions and hopefully get some content on there that you're looking for.
And also, make sure you follow us on Facebook and Instagram. And by the way, Sean, we have not announced, and I can't believe I went clear to the end of the episode without telling everybody, but we are now on all of your favorite podcast.
Finally.
Yep. Yeah.
Took four episodes to get us there.
Right,
so.
Right. Exactly. But no, we are on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Amazon Music, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, Pandora. The list goes on.
Nice.
We're going to get some links up on our website soon where you can click on those directly. But, you know, make sure you subscribe to the show on your favorite podcast outlet.
Yeah, we're working hard to try to bring it to everybody as easily as possible on your favorite medium, and hopefully you guys will keep listening and tune in. We really appreciate all the listeners, and we've heard from quite a few people already, and we really appreciate your comments.
Well, Sean, I think that's a wrap from the Florida State Shoot. Everybody, thank you very much for listening, and we'll see you on the next one.